Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for Detwild Municipals. Today's podcast title is Property Tax Paying. I'm joined by Kanal Kamal, a reporter on our team, and I'd like to welcome for the first time to our podcast, Tracy Haddon-Lowe, a fellow with the Ann T. and Robert M. Bass Center for Transformative Placemaking at Brookings Metro. We'll be discussing the impact of commercial real estate valuations on property tax revenues for municipalities. Kanal, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me back again.
And Tracy, welcome to the Muni Lowdown.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, this is the part of the podcast where I ask the guests, why are you here? In terms of explaining your expertise and a little bit about our background. So can you share some of that with us?
Paul, I'm here because the health and strength of cities is my passion. What I care about is that people and places have what they need to thrive, and a government that can function, can deliver services, and has the resources that it needs to do that is a critical part of that.
In our pre-production meeting, you had mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing because I'll let you explain it because you'll do a much better job, this whole idea of cyclical solutions for structural problems. Can you expand a little bit on that?
First, I want to be clear that I'm actually quoting a friend of mine. His name is Ben Gagliore, and he is an economist who's a senior advisor at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. There are good people out there in government who are thinking the right way about the problems that we're facing right now. What this is about is that if you think about, for example, the American Rescue Plan, a one-time intervention by the federal government in order to respond to what appears to be the one-time disruption of the pandemic, right? So that's an example of a cyclical solution that just like, oh, if things get bad, then I'll intervene. But the issue is that what we see happen when cyclical problems arise is that most of what they do is just make structural problems worse. So in other words, problems that existed before the pandemic have been exacerbated and exaggerated by the disruption, but they weren't caused by the disruption. And so a cyclical one-time solution cannot really solve them. All it can do is maybe quiet them down a little. And then we're still left with the same old structural problem that we had beforehand.
Thank you for that explanation. And it was much better than what I could have done. I want to start out with this framework you've talked about before, the doom loop. What is that and how does that factor into this discussion today?
To be clear, I am not the prophet of the doom loop. And I don't think that we're necessarily in a doom loop right now. But let me explain what it is. So the doom loop is an example of this interaction between cyclical disruptions and structural problems. If there is a one-time disruption, such as the pandemic, that is like a negative shock to the system of a city, then that reduces demand for the city, right? It makes people come to cities less. So for example, like the pandemic disrupted tourism, it disrupted office commuting. Those are two things. That disruption in demand leads to a loss of revenue. So now the city has less money than it had before, whether that's because of less sales tax from those tourists, less hospitality taxes, or less transit fares from the commuters. Because there's less revenue, well, there's less money to provide services. Cities have to have balanced budgets. You know, they're not the federal government. They can't print more money. They have to balance their budgets. And so they have to cut services. But when you cut services, that makes the city less attractive, which again results in a reduction in demand for the city. So now even fewer people want to come there or want to be there. And that creates a self-reinforcing cycle, the doom loop. That's the hypothesis about what can happen to cities when they experience this kind of like negative exogenous shock.
So Tracy, while it is true that reductions in market values will take several years to affect property tax revenues, depending on the city, office properties do contribute significantly to tax assessments. So what innovative approaches or policy adaptations have you seen being considered to mitigate the tax implications of the office market distress?
Some cities have a lot more exposure than others to office market valuations. A typical U.S. city actually relies a lot more on residential property tax valuations and residential property, generally speaking, is doing really well, you know, across a broad variety of regional market contexts in the US right now. That's why I think that the doom loop narrative is a little bit oversold. That said, there are some major cities that have significant exposure, whether through because of the structure of their tax regime or just because of their overall where office inventory is located, you know, within the region. You know, and New York obviously has tremendous exposure, right? It's really unusual among US cities in that 50% of all of the offices in the entire New York metro area, spanning from like upstate to Pennsylvania, half of all the offices in that huge mega region are in Manhattan, south of Central Park. The city's property tax footprint is extraordinarily exposed to commercial real estate, given that a lot of media are based in New York. I think that's why there's been a lot of attention to this issue. New York has some really great responses to think about what to do about this. So the first is to offer to offices that are in distressed submarkets that are themselves like kind of the more distressed assets within that submarket. They have a new program called MCOR, where they are offering very modest tax breaks in order to help those office owners upgrade their office buildings from old, obsolete, undesirable offices into modern offices, which there is still demand for. So I think that's a really, really smart response.
So Tracy, when I think about commercial real estate or offices and or commuting before the pandemic, in my mind, and this is just my personal thing, I think of a sardine can environment. We're bringing all these people into the city. They then go and shop at all the local businesses, support all the businesses. And it worked maybe for those businesses. I'm not so sure it worked for the people, but that was the model in my mind. Obviously, post-pandemic, that's changed a bit. I'm not sure if we're ever going back to a time when you're going to have everybody coming into the office 5 days a week. But obviously, cities need those property taxes from having all these buildings occupied. And if they're not all occupied, then you have to do something. So I've seen a lot of stories about the office to housing conversion. Again, personally, I'm a little skeptical of that for different reasons, but I wanted to get your thoughts on office to residential conversions in downtown areas.
I think you're right to be skeptical about this, because if the justification for office to residential conversion is the need to rehabilitate the tax base, for example, the cities that have more exposure to commercial real estate within their fiscal models, they typically tax offices at a higher millage rate than they tax residential. And so that actually does create a natural tax incentive to convert from offices to residential, but that's because the residential will be taxed at a lower rate. And so office to residential conversion is not a solution in order to generate tax revenue per se. What we should understand office to residential as is, one, an opportunity to add housing in the very best locations, and two, as a strategy to strengthen demand for the remaining office product. People are still going to offices and they're still working in them. We want to do it in a different way that's more flexible. And to your point, commuting sucks.
Yes.
And nobody wants to do it, right? Putting housing very near offices is a way to make commuting great, because now it's a gorgeous walk instead of a many miles long grind. And it also makes it easier to use your office flexibly. Pop in, pop out, without having to internalize the cost of providing an office into your own home and your household. Office to residential conversion does make sense for offices that are non-performing, but you can't replace offices with housing. The core value proposition of cities is housing near jobs. It is not housing instead of jobs.
Tracy, I wanted to understand, why are some cities like Chicago, Cincinnati, or Sacramento experiencing a slower downtown recovery than cities like, say, Atlanta, Las Vegas, and Phoenix? Is there a common set of factors that can help explain this, or is every situation unique?
There's a ton of research going into this question right now, and nobody has the definitive answer yet. what we can see from the research that's been done so far is there are a couple of key variables that we're starting to be pretty sure are predictive of this. They don't explain all of the variants, but one thing that's key is commute length. In cities where the average commute length is shorter, return to office is higher, and also business travel, for example. Industrial composition is also important. Regions where a bigger share of the workforce is in the technology sector are having slower downtown recoveries because tech is the sector with the highest rate of adoption of telework and remote work. They were essentially like when everything shut down for COVID, the tech people were the first people to go and they're the last to come back and they might not come back. So lots of exposure there. But this isn't enough to explain all of it. And I think that's because when you look at the typical US downtown, both prior to the pandemic and during recovery, half of the foot traffic that's in a downtown, more than half on a typical day, is casual visitors. Downtown foot traffic is not driven by office workers. It's driven by some of it is the people visiting them, right? A casual visitor could be someone coming downtown to see their lawyer or their therapist, but it's also domestic, regional, national, or international tourists. International tourism in particular in the US has been slow to recover.
So Tracy, given your experience in transit, I just wanted to know how important is mass transit to a healthy commercial real estate market?
Well, it depends. Downtowns are different than other commercial real estate submarkets. The unique value add of downtowns is their unparalleled regional accessibility, right? That they're at the center of a region, of a labor market, of a set of infrastructure. And transit is critical to maximizing that accessibility because there are really hard limits on how many people you can move in cars on streets, right? Like that's where traffic comes from. So if you want to get beyond the limits imposed by cars, the need for parking and car storage and road volume, you need mass transportation. And that's what transit does.
We've been talking about offices and we've also been talking about how the residential side seems to be doing a lot better. What's to explain for the growing divergence between residential neighborhoods that are thriving, but the downtowns aren't?
I mean, what you're talking about is that vibrant places are about people. And so the places that are doing really well right now are the places where people are spending their time. And so if a big chunk of the regional population is on telework and is spending more time than ever in the neighborhoods where they live, then what we see is that that's causing actually like a neighborhood retail renaissance, where in neighborhoods, across the economic spectrum, the neighborhood retail is doing better than ever because their customer base is greatly expanded in terms of the hours that people are there and the number of people that are there.
How do cities deal with or absorb the losses in tax revenues that they're seeing because less people are commuting into the cities? Companies are making the decisions to vacate or downsize their office space. What can cities do to meet those challenges?
It is so critical that cities correctly understand the challenge of the current moment. Downtowns are still singularly valuable assets. They have locational advantages that nowhere else has. What downtowns are facing right now is simple. They're old.
Yes.
Right? Like these are the historic cores of cities. And so they're just literally older than even surrounding neighborhoods or other activity centers within regions. And because they're old, their product mix is noticeably different than the way that commercial real estate builds now, which is much more about mixed use. And because they're old, the product that they do have is just relatively dated compared to what the economy wants from an office now, right? The floor plates aren't right. We're talking about like cube boxes instead of the kind of open and collaborative spaces that are why we leave our homes in order to go interact with coworkers. So when something is old, you have to renovate just like you would your house. What downtowns need right now is strategic investment in order to modernize themselves so that they can once again leverage the locational advantage that remains.
Well, thanks, Tracy and Kunal, for a thoughtful dialogue on commercial real estate and property taxes. And to our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and/or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.